with a Cuban cigar. In the middle of Paris with a Dominican bar. Great head on her shoulder, she probably studied abroad. She transferred to Harvard from King's College in Martin. She says that I'm her favorite cause she admires the art. Michelangelo with the flow, Picasso with the bar. Well put together like a piece by Gershwin. Renaissance style, tonight it's picture perfect. So smile and pack your bags real good, baby, cause you'll be gone for a while. Wow, wow.
Hey everyone, welcome you all to Drive Through HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals. Well, today we're so excited to talk such a hot topic nowadays, immigration reform. So let's talk about immigration reform. Today, William and I doing a call-in show. So if you're listening to the show or if you have a particular reason or idea on how to fix this immigration reform, call us in to 347-996-5600 and hit 1 to talk to the host. So we will know you have some great ideas, some stories, personal stories, and we are ready to kick off. Hey, William, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I got in at about 4 a.m. from Los Angeles, so I'm almost rested. I've taken about 6 4-hour energies, so I believe I'll have enough energy to make it the rest of the day. But I'm doing well. No complaints.
Oh, yeah. Well, happy to hear. And, well, a lot of discussions are happening on this immigration reform, and it's a great idea to pitch in that particular topic during this time and to hear some of our, to hear the ideas and personal stories from some of our audience. That could be great. And from personally, from my end, being an immigrant, I am actually highly looking forward to, you know, happening something positively on this immigration reform. What do you think?
Yeah, I have a very liberal view of immigration. So a couple things of notes. I kind of look at this country as a wave of immigrants. So if you go back 400 years, there were, yeah, indigenous people here, and of which some of my heritage traces back on that side. But waves of immigrants came in. And you know, to say that there was an official process at any given point, there, what usually happened with immigrants is they did the things that no one else wanted to do. So if you go back into the, you know, let's say the 1820s or the 1780s, and, you know, pick a decade-ish, and whatever group that's coming over usually displaced to them was the things that no one else really wanted to do. And I'm reminded, like, last week it was in the low 30s, and it was Sunday, and I went out and got breakfast about 9 o'clock, and I stopped and got gas, and there was these five, and I'll just say Hispanic or of Latin descent men, kind of huddled together on the side of this gas station, all looking for work. They're all looking to do something, to dig ditches, to clear, you know, to clear or to pick up trash or what, you know, whatever, day labor, whatever the hell the job was. It's 30 degrees outside, and they're looking to work. Now, whose work are they really displacing? So, of course, you know, I'm seeing all this, and I went and got them coffee and hung out with them for a couple of minutes, and it's just like, you know what? They're not displacing my job. They're not taking my brother's job. They're not taking a job out from behind, underneath my son or something like that. These are people that just want to work. So, I have a very liberal view of immigration. I think you should let anybody, I think America should let anybody that wants to come in, come in.
Mm-hmm.
And the only caveats I have around that are criminals and people that want to do harm to the country. So people that actually want to come in and do harm, and criminals and crazies. So I think again, very kind of a simplistic approach to this is that you test everybody and you fingerprint and you've got blood and DNA and you've done background checks and psychological tests and all that other stuff. But other than that, if somebody wants to be here and they want to add value to our country, why are we keeping them out, A, and why aren't they a part of our fabric of our society? So, again, I have a very liberal approach to immigration. So what do you think?
Yeah, I have my own personal stories, too. As you said, most of the immigrants, I mean every immigrant, stepping inside this country, you know, looking for opportunities and looking for a great career and, of course, looking for a great life. And personally, from my end, as you all know, I'm such a passionate person in my career. I want to work. I wanted to contribute. And, of course, it is my own identity, right? But being an immigrant in the United States, I'm facing this challenge for the past 3 years. It's been 3 years right now. I'm in the United States. And I came here on an H-4 visa, which is, the normal visa category that U.S. will allow the spouse of H-1B workers in the United States. So that's why I came in here, and my husband works here. So I am actually looking forward to happening something positively so that, you know, these H-4 visa categories, they're not allowed to work here. But the broken piece of immigration system is, which is so crooked, there is, I can't see any kind of a logic per se. There are so many different visa categories out there. Some of them are allowed to work. Some of them are not allowed to work. But is there a logic behind it? Is they say that, okay, the native workers shouldn't be facing any kind of a trouble of a lot of immigrants are coming in. So their opportunities should not be misused by immigrants. That is one per se. But you know what? The world preaches about women becoming independent, right?
Yeah.
So
well, let me highlight something.
True. Yeah, tell me.
Let me highlight something. You're a perfect example. Someone that's smart, understands the market, would love to add value. In fact, you're doing so in a lot of different ways where you can. And the system is stacked against you, so you can't. It's very difficult for you to get a job. So it's like I look at this and I say to myself, why? Why does that exist? Just why does that process exist? And it's not just you. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of people like you that would love to add value. And as a country, we're saying, oh, no, it would be too hard for the people that are already here. That's just not true. I mean, first of all, what most people hide behind when you talk about immigration is they hide behind, well, there's a bunch of people already here illegally, and the people that are here illegally, what are we going to do with them? Because there's people that have been here 10, 20, 30, 40, couple generations illegally. What are we going to do with them? Make them citizens, you know? Tax them like everybody else. So immigration is a hot topic, and it's not just for the folks like you and I. It's a hot topic because it touches on services, social services in particular. It touches on taxation, and so how do we tax? How do we tax people that are here illegally? You know, first of all, why do we condone illegal activity? So now you have to deal with another emotionally charged issue that, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, hell, last week, somebody came to this country illegally, and we don't want to condone that. But at the same time of not condoning it, we're not taxing those folks. There's no pathway for those folks to become citizens other than a very arcane system. And before we go on, Nisha, we actually do have a call from the 901. Oh. Why don't we actually take a call? 901, you are live on the air.
Hey, William, Nisha, what's going on? It's Chris Fields.
Well, hello, Chris Fields. What's your take on immigration?
I was waiting, and you guys touched on a lot of the points that I was going to make. But I'm so glad you decided to do this show. And I talked with Misha a couple times about this, and she really, you know, brought a perspective to it that I could appreciate. And it's just, you know, when you know someone who is talented and extremely educated and all that, who just wants to work, it kind of opens up your sensitivity to the issue. So it's something that I've kind of paid attention to since I've met Misha, and so when I see things on the news and see certain discussions, I kind of listen in for a little bit. So I wanted to, one, call in and say hey to you guys. I hadn't said hi. I wish you guys a happy new year, and also let you know that I think this show is very important that you're doing today, and it's something that, you know, we need to talk about things like this more, because, you know, you were making some great points with before you guys let me come in about, you know, you're not really taking opportunities away. It's about competition. America has always been about spreading the best and the brightest in and being a great country. And so when you have people who are here willing to work and, like you said, not criminals and not bringing the system down, you know, it's a shame that those people can't get opportunities. And you know, we have to be honest here and say that some people who have been here under educational pretenses and do other things, you know, they definitely hurt the cause a little bit, a lot. But we still need to have better systems in place to weed those people out and kind of look at the people who are trying to make this a better society. So great job, guys. I appreciate you guys doing the show.
Appreciate it, Chris. Crazy is crazy. I mean, you're going to have crazy. Crazy knows no culture. It knows no racial background, no gender. Crazy knows no age difference. Crazy is just crazy, and there are going to be crazies out there in every society. One of the things I found, I sponsored a bunch of H-1Bs back in the day, and one of the things I found really odd about the process is that depending on the country of origin, so, you know, let's say you were sponsoring a software engineer, a particular type of software engineer, a web, you know, software engineer, if you will, and you wanted to do it from Great Britain, it was relatively easy. But if you wanted to hire that person and they just so happened to be from India, very difficult. From Mexico, extremely difficult. So it's almost like, you know, they didn't treat every country the same way, and they don't. And if anyone tells you that they do, they're absolutely lying to you, because I've been through this process and had two very equal candidates just so happened to be from different countries, and the process was absolutely it was absolutely different. One was almost impossible to get someone sponsored from certain countries. So, again, like the fair treatment, if talent is talent, and again, I don't believe in the kind of the rhetoric that we're taking jobs from Americans. I don't believe that we have enough talent in America to do the jobs that we need to get done. I think there's a whole retraining of America that has to actually happen. And then, quite frankly, just because you're American, it doesn't mean you're owed a job, which, you know, again, is not a popular thought. But I just don't believe that. I believe you have to get off your ass and go work for the job. And so if that means getting out there and retraining and taking a couple of degrees down, great. Vocational school, great. Internship, vocational training, whatever. I don't care. Get out there and make yourself the best candidate that you can, and all that competition stuff gets sorted out. But I don't believe you're owed a job. Just because you were,
yeah,
just so happened that you were born in Detroit or born, in Dallas, Texas or whatever, I don't think you're owed a job. So, Misha, what's, because your husband's, you know, his process is kind of moving along, your process is moving along. What's been the most frustrating kind of part of the process for you?
Well, there's no clarity. You know what? It's just a hope, and we always say that hope is not a strategy, right? Because we kind of wait, and then we know that how long. There is a point of frustration that you reach, but it's all about how do we survive here. Because most of the immigrants I have seen in my life and in my friend circle and through my research, most of the immigrants from Asia and India, they come here, they wanted to have a family, not just their career alone. So if their spouse are not, if it is a male or a female, if their spouse are not going to be in a happy, not going to be independent in this country in order to, you know, go out there and then do whatever she wanted to be to earn her living or whatever. If that is not be allowed over here, chances are there yours is going to lose a lot of talent because they might go to some other land or go back to their own homeland. So these all chances I have seen. And the other aspect that I've, the tax aspect, as you said, William, you know, we legally enter in the United States, right? But on the name of identity H4 carrying our password, but we are denied Social Security number. Although we pay a fair amount of taxes, even Social Security amounts get deducted from my husband's salary, which may or may not be used, right? So I don't know when this immigration stuff is going to fix. I've seen some particular categories, they have this L2 visas, which is an Indian company. They have an operations in the United States. They can come in here. So their spouses are also allowed to work on an L2 visa. So this is a different category. There's a lot of confusions on this immigration system that employers are even confused or picking a candidate for filing a visa or stuff like that, unless they have a technical background, I must say.
Yeah. And a real quick note, Lisa Horn from SHRM just tweeted out to make sure to write letters to your Congress urging them for immigration reform. That's actually really, really important. I'm kind of one of these advocates around FWD, forward.us, which is kind of out of the Silicon Valley. A bunch of these tech people kind of got together and sort of created a lot of momentum because they couldn't, you know, if you're out in the valley and you're trying to hire a software engineer, good luck. They're just not there. And so they're finding it very difficult to bring software engineers into Silicon Valley. So that's very specific around kind of one-ish skill set. But, you know, as a part of that, I actually called my local rep, who's Joe Barton. And you know, when I talked to Joe's aide, which first of all, getting through talking to an aide, that was a fantastic experience. And then, you know, what she said to me is she said, well, what recommendations do you have? You know, he's got a hardline stance. You know, how do I crack the stance? Like, she was not playing devil's advocate. She was actually like, okay, all right, let's do this. How would you recommend we go about changing it? And thank God I had like five things, you know, on my list of what we could do to change it. But to Lisa's point, if you really want to change this, and there's a lot of great people out there that are a part of SHRM and have had to deal with this on both sides. I remember Robin Schooling commenting the other day on Facebook about how she's had to deal with this both as an HR leader and also as a friend to someone that was going through the process. So, you know, get involved locally. Get involved with your senators and your congressmen and women and just start pushing. Hey, this needs to change. You know, it's just kind of dumb. Our approach is dumb. Let's do something about it, et cetera. So, Nisha, I want to get back to you for just a second. So one of the things I've seen with a lot of folks that the immigrants that have more recent than not come to the United States is, you know, you mentioned that there's not clear, but it's also one of these things that we don't talk. Like, I remember when I was going through the process of sponsoring a lot of H-1Bs, they didn't even talk. So it was kind of like the immigration attorneys didn't really create clarity. Those that were going through the process didn't create clarity. Government, dealing with anybody in the government, creating clarity around when certain dates were open for enrollment, when they were closed, how many people they were going to take from each country. Because if you've ever done an H-1B, if you've ever sponsored an H-1B, they basically have these enrollment dates, and the enrollment dates, I believe it's still twice a year, but please don't hold me to that. And they take enrollments. You basically put your name, you put your name in, but what they don't tell you is how many people they're going to take from any country. So if you just so happen to be from Croatia or, you know, pick a place out there on the map, if you just so happen to be, you might get to the top of the list because they take more or less people from that area. And so, Misha, let's get back to you in your process right now. Where are you in your process? So you want to work, and God knows we would love for you to work, but where are you at in your process?
Well, I'm currently, it's the same process that I came in here in 2010 to United States. There is no change with that process. We have applied for our green card, and which is still going on, and my visa is still H-4. I'm not allowed to work, and my husband is expecting his green card, which is, again, you know what, it takes about 12 to 13 years for an EB2 category to get their green card. Or if it is EB3 category, well, for the audience, if you don't know EB2 or EB3, it's a category that we apply for green card. So one is filing with a master degree, and the other one is filing with your bachelor degree. So if you're going to file your green card on your bachelor degree, it's gonna take probably 18 years at this till this time. That's what we have seen. And if it is on master degree, probably 12 to 13 years it will take. So my husband, he has applied in 2008. So you can see where's that gonna hit. So I cannot wait this long, you know, in order to get that work visa. Because as an individual, I wanted to work, I wanted to contribute, and I wanted to grow in my career, right? So in order to pursue that, yes, I can go back to school and I can learn, but I do have to spend money. I do have to have loans for that. But probably, what if you're not in that situation to spend that money? Yes, I will go for work. So for that, I would require employers to probably file my visa. But the issue here is when I'm approaching employers, they still don't even know what is the process look like. Some of them are skeptical. Some of them are afraid to go through the process. This USISC or the audit process or filing an H-1B, they're pretty much afraid of going through any sort of audit that's going to happen to their organization. So that is a trouble that I'm facing. But being an HR professional, I can put myself in their shoes. You know what? For a H-4 visa candidate like me, in order to get the work visa, the visa quota will open on April 1st. And luckily, if I get an employer to file my work visa and they have filed it, and luckily, let's just say USIC is going to approve it, thinking that I'm a unique candidate and I have something unique to contribute to this country. And once they approve it, the authorization card or whatever, that legal paper that you're going to get, we call it as Employment Authorization ID. So we will get only in October. So that means an HR professional or any organization need to wait 8 months for a candidate to be on board. That is the risk. So,
well, you know, Nisha and William, I wanted to add a couple things, and I want to, you know, be off here and let somebody else talk. But I have close friends whose parents were from Laos and moved here and had a family, and my life is enriched by them making that decision. And this was before we had, you know, such strict laws and things like that. So I have benefited from, you know, having people in my life who come from different backgrounds and cultures and different scenarios and situations. So I kind of have a sensitivity for that. And then the next thing I want to just share real quick, a couple of years ago we got our roof redone on our house, and the guy came out here. The guy who I worked with, he was an American guy, English, you know, American, whatever. But when he came to do the work, he had basically a troop or a staff of Hispanic workers, and they were so efficient. Like, they got up there on the roof, they tore down the old shingles, put the new stuff up, cleaned the yard when they left, and they did all this in like 8 hours, and they didn't disturb the neighborhood and all that. It was just so efficient. And I remember thinking, I was talking to my brother, we were looking at the finished product, and we were like, I don't know if American workers could have done that like that. And I don't want to generalize. I'm sure there's some great companies out there. So, but it was just interesting because the way these guys worked, it was so organized and it was so well done, no complaining and no fussing and no loud music, and they did their job and came down. And they really had a line-by-line process, so you can tell they did it before, but it was just so well organized that we just were looking at it like, you know what, I don't know if American workers could have been that organized. And the point of that is the ability to, and the wanting to work, the wanting to work and wanting to get the job done in a professionalism. So I wanted to share those two things with you guys and tell you guys it was a great show and just stop by and say hi.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And we've got another call from 815. 815, you're live with Drive Through HR.
Thanks, William. John Jorgensen. One thing that has always kind of, I won't say bugged me, but concerned me a little bit, I've spent most of my career, a lot of my career in manufacturing. And granted, it was a little while ago, but they you've got medium to small manufacturers out there hiring under the assumption that the people they're hiring are legal. I don't know if the black market still exists, but you know, a few years ago I could take you to several places in downtown or in the west side of Chicago and get you a new driver's license and Social Security card that would allow you to get in to any company that you couldn't find anything wrong with. They were perfect copies. One company I was with, we had an audit from our lovely ICE agents, or whatever they were called back then. They took 20% of our workforce in one morning. And this was 20% of what we had invested training and time into to become really good workers. And you get all these people out there saying, oh, all these illegals have got to go. Well, wait a minute. A lot of companies have invested a lot of time and money into these illegals, and there's got to be some way for, you know, I can't say, you know, just let them in with a pat on the back saying, you know, we're going to forgive everything you've done. But there's a lot of time and money invested into illegals that are out there, and I don't think the government takes that into consideration as far as what needs to be done in the whole process. So, and that doesn't even get to your visa level things.
You know, like you said. John, what's funny is I grew up in that environment. My dad ran, he was a corrugated plant engineer. So basically he ran, corrugated is cardboard. Yeah. And so he ran several plants for Weyerhaeuser and companies like that. So when I grew up going to these plants as a kid, and everyone that worked there, I mean, it's probably half and half of what is quote-unquote white and half as quote-unquote Mexican. And, man, it was just life. That was kind of a part of what was going on. I no more thought of that and the man in the moon. And then years later, I started thinking more about ICE and how people – I mean, at the end of the day, it's I think the word that we use, illegal, is probably – it's almost like when you look at ACA versus Obamacare. So you can say ACA and Obamacare are the same thing. it's a law that was passed. It just shows your political, it's just your orientation depending on what term you use. So when we say illegals, go ahead.
I just say a better term probably is undocumented.
Undocumented is right. Yeah. Well, that's a better way of looking at it. Good God, the clock is working against us. We've got like 60 seconds left. Y'all, this has been a fun show. Nisha and I woke up this morning. We said, you know what, let's do something a little bit different. We picked a topic out of thin air. And we need to do more shows like this. So email Nisha or Brian or I, and we'll slate some more topical shows when we don't have guests and whatnot. But I want to thank everyone for listening today. It's been a wonderful show. I think a very passionate show, I would say. Have a wonderful Friday afternoon. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks to everyone for listening to Drive Through HR and letting us invade your ear hole. And everyone have a wonderful weekend, and we're out.
Bye, everyone.
See you.
Talk to y'all later.